Welcome to the Bleep Bulimia podcast with guest Cynthia Klein, author of Ally Parenting.
Hi, everyone. I am Lorianne. I am the host of Bleep Bulimia. And today I'm so pleased to have Cynthia Klein. She's the author of Ally Parenting. But more so, I invited her to explain to us how to keep the line of communication open with our children so they can reach out to us. And that is something that we've struggled with as parents. Particularly, like I know that I was bulimic. My parents had struggles with dealing with the communication with me, and we still struggle with that with our younger children, no matter what they're struggling with. So thank you so much for being here, Cynthia, with me. Really, really seriously.
Yeah, thank you. Great to be here, and hello to everyone.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to write your book, Ally Parenting.
Well, I think about me, I think about my struggle with my mother as a teenager was kind of the seed that was planted that was like, I want a better relationship. And so I studied psychology. I went to Berkeley, got my degree in psychology, ended up being a teacher. And with time, it was like, what I really am passionate about is How do I learn how to have an open relationship and a connected relationship with my daughter? So I have a daughter who's now a young adult and married. And it was like, I didn't have the skills. So I studied, I had training in different parenting programs. And I felt like there's many books and there's many wonderful books. And I felt like when I started doing my private coaching, back in the 90s, that their parents needed to have a step-by-step kind of clear, concise approach to think about parenting, how to evaluate what was going on. And men really need to have, and women too, but men really need to have a clear, concise, to the point, direct guide that will help them. And so I thought, boy, ally, that's what we really need to be. We really need to feel that our kids at the end of the day feel like, even when you say no, right, that you are there for them and you are on their side rather than an adversary. So I had my clients telling me, when are you going to write a book? When are you going to write a book? So it was like, okay, here it is.
So this is a big thing that we talked about. And by the way, I want to thank you for being, and I do need to speak to this. We're on our Lift Your Story podcast. I hope that our listeners here do go there and listen to Cynthia on that one too. And this is what intrigued me, was that I know that there are a lot of parents who struggle with speaking to their children about bulimia, as I spoke to at the beginning of this. And you were talking about blocks, and I'm interested in that, if you can expand on that. What are the blocks of parents to children and such?
And there are also communication blocks with our partner and with other adults. So everything I'm talking about today, I think of with my friends, I think of with my husband, I think of with my grown daughter. So it's applicable to all kind of relationships. And I think because with your children, right? Your children can be like, my daughter's 33, right? So they can be grown children as well. And this will be really helpful. I think when kids are growing up, they all have struggles of some sort or another, right? They had challenges in their life. And it's only been fairly recent that we really have become more aware of how we have a tendency to shut another person down, and that we get hurt and then we lash out, we get angry, right? There's all these emotions that go on because we don't feel heard. We don't feel valued. We feel, we don't feel important. And what I studied was about communication blocks. It's like when your child is expressing a struggle, they are personally happening. It's to them. It's like, I'm not talking about when you're saying it's time to empty the dishwasher and they start to argue with you. I'm not talking about that. Okay. I'm not talking about when you say, okay, it's time to turn in your cell phone. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when they are having their own challenge, their own struggle, how do you respond that will either keep them talking to you or keep them from you? Like, how do you respond determines whether you're going to open up like this bridge of communication and they're going to keep talking, or they're going to say something like, you don't understand, I don't want to talk to you, and shut up and leave me alone. And, you know, that. So I really want to help talk today a little bit about how you're talking now that might be shutting them down and what to say instead.
I have to ask you a question about something though. As adults, we are still children no matter what, a lot of times. I mean, we're always learning, and our children perceive us as being that person up there and that we should have it all together. And we may have been smarter than them in a sense of what our experiences are, but sometimes they're smarter than us in the way that they deal with things. And I know I might be putting you on the spot here, but I sometimes think that as much as I'm trying to communicate with my daughter, sometimes she does not, or my sons, they don't understand that as much as what they're going through, I've gone through that and 30 years more of that. So sometimes I fail. And right. Do you shut that off from them? Do you just focus on them, or how? So when you're talking about the blocks, this is where I want to bring in, how do parents, because sometimes we lose it because we're sitting there going, oh my goodness, I know what you're feeling like. And I remember you saying, say, I know it's difficult, but I can't completely relate with you. And they don't want to hear that. But we're kids, right? So sometimes we do that. We'll throw that at them going, oh yeah, I remember, blah, 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 blah.
Right. So let me give you the definition of what a communication block is. So again, remember, it's your child is expressing what might, you know, maybe they're saying, I don't like the way I look. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're saying, I can't do this schoolwork. Maybe they're saying, I really hate my friend. They're so mean to me. My own daughter had five girls in fifth grade all reject her. So she had trauma that way. So kids are having some sort of trauma in their life. So when they say that, that's what I'm talking about. Okay. So how you respond can either make your child feel shut down, like you don't want to hear them, or you can respond in a way that'll make them feel hurt. So a communication block. So for example, let's say your child says, I don't look good. You know, I just don't look good in anything. There's nothing I can wear. I don't look good, right? I look fat, I look thin, whatever it is. So you have a choice at that point in time. How are you going to respond? Because the goal is to keep them talking. So there's some ways that might feel like a block to them. It's what's really important. I'm saying the word might. So let's say they said, I don't look good in anything. I don't have anything to wear. Okay. Now, if you do placating is when you want to take away their pain and make them feel better. A placating response would be, you know, honey, I think you look fine in all those things. I think you can just wear anything. Don't worry about it so much. Okay, so the intent was to take away their suffering, right? However, it can feel to the child like you don't want to hear what they're going through, that you don't understand, and that you don't want them to feel that way, and that you can't handle them suffering. Mm-hmm. So that placating is a really big communication block. Now, so another thing you mentioned was wanting to kind of say how you went through that experience yourself, right? And that's called a me too-ism. So me too-ism is when your child or friend, whatever, is expressing some struggle they're having, some personal thing. They haven't said to you, tell me what to do. They just are kind of letting it out. And you talk about yourself with the belief that if I talk about my experience, then it's going to make them feel better. I don't know where that came from, but maybe it's like, if they know that I've also done it, that they're going to feel better. So that's the intent. So if they say, you know, I don't look good in anything, and you say, you know, I had that struggle also when I was your age, that could be a me tooism. If they respond with, it's different now, you don't understand, we're getting bombarded, all this social media now, I don't care what you went through. If you get that kind of response, then you know, oh, I've blocked her, that hasn't been helpful for her. So it's becoming aware of when your child expresses some suffering, when you respond, what are you getting from them? So I just gave you examples of two times of shutting it out. Another one would be giving advice when you're not asked. And we do that because we feel like we know better, right? Like, and it might start out with, let's say, again, same scenario, you know, I don't look good with that. You know, honey, well, I think you should really not feel that way about it. And maybe you should even wear some different kinds of clothes, because the clothes that you're wearing really don't flatter you.
Can I say one quick interjection?
Yes.
The word should to me is like a swear word.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Go on. Sorry.
No, I love that, because should is a very judgmental.
It is.
So judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I know you, mm-hmm. and you don't know you. So one thing I wanted to say, though, when you're empathetic, I would encourage you to not say, I know, because that was an example when we talked about, to not say, I know how you feel. I would not say, I know, because that's actually could be a block of psychologizing. So even though it feels like it's empathetic, but you're saying, I know, like, I know you. So if you say, oh, I know, you know, you're really having a hard time. And if your child responds with, you don't understand. What do you mean? You don't know. Then that has been a communication block called psychologizing. So instead, so I've talked about three different blocks already. So I've talked about what giving advice, placating, well, four actually, me tooism. They talk about placating, me tooism, giving advice. Yeah, I guess those three, those main three.
Yeah.
Is, again, you always think about how is what I'm saying impacting the person. So if they're getting upset, they don't like it, you don't understand, I don't want to hear what you have to say. Oh, I have some parents who do give advice and the kid swears at them, especially by the time they're teenagers, swear at them, leave me alone, and they go slam the door. And the parents like going, wait a minute, I love my child, I'm just trying to help. So be very mindful of not saying to your child, I'm just trying to help, why are you getting so upset?
Yeah.
So in my book, Ally Parenting, I have a whole chart, and I have actually a little kind of a page from it, those of looking on, I have a list of all these different blocks and an example and the underlying message that could make it a communication block.
Beautiful. So, I know that we have listeners, so I guess this is going to be on YouTube for anybody who prefers YouTube, but for our podcast listeners, can you maybe read out a couple of them? Because I saw the chart. How many are there on that chart? Because
Well, I have 10.
Yeah, okay.
Different opportunities here.
I love the opportunities. I'd rather those than the opposites.
Right. So here's one I hadn't mentioned yet, which is interrogating. Wow. So that's when you ask a question and the underlying message, it will feels like to them like how they're going to respond, they've done something wrong. So even if you pick up a child and you say, how was school today? Fine. What did you do? Oh, nothing. So what's happened is your question feels like an interrogation. So it's the underlying message, you've done something wrong and you're going to start interrogating. So be very mindful about that. Another one is, I talked about sarcasm. Be careful about that. Is, you know, well, that's, you know, honey, that's really silly to be worried about. What? Don't worry about how you think other people see you. Don't worry about that. That's ridiculous. That's sarcasm. And that's something that usually runs in families and people learn. Another one would be moralizing. So doing some sort of a moral. Some parents I work with love doing this.
Guilt, you know, factor? Honey,
what's that?
Isn't that part of the guilt factor?
Well, it's kind of like the sense of I know best and I'm going to tell you a moral about life.
Okay.
So that you don't feel that way. So all of these kind of shut a person down. If you're saying it and they shut down, it's because of somehow their self-esteem is hurt. That's the foundation of it. They feel hurt. They don't feel valued. They don't feel important. They don't feel listened to. So one of the things I teach is how to respond with what's called empathetic phrase instead to keep the dialogue going. That's all you're doing is, and I'll give you some examples of that. So you're not trying to solve their problem. Let's say they're saying, you know, I hate my teacher. That's their problem. That can trigger a lot of things in parents, right? You shouldn't say that. You know, teachers just trying to do the best that they can. I felt that way when I was your age. These are all things that can make the kids shut down. So, okay, you know, I hate my teacher. Here's that empathetic phrase. I'm not analyzing. I'm not asking questions. I'm not trying to fix it. Wow, that's hard. That's it.
Can I interject very quickly? Because I spoke to you just before we came on, and it was from our previous Lift Your Story. You said, you know, speak to your daughter. I did mess up. I did blow up at her. Like it's like parents do, because we love our children and we don't hear from them. And even if they're, you know, she's 28 and, you know, I was told that she was going to come and see me, didn't hear from her. And yes, I kind of like, what are you doing? Why don't you answer me? And I've been tiptoeing very carefully. However, I did use previously, and I tried it, and I said, I know that this has been difficult for you. She wrote me back, yes, Mom, I love you. And that was lovely. But how far do you go tiptoeing on that without the return of the respect of you doing all this, bending over backwards? All you're asking for is, and she said, I love you no matter if you're angry at me, which was beautiful at the end of it. But I wrote to her, I said, if you couldn't show up because your father had COVID and you had connection with him, it takes 10 seconds to text me. And so I think that where do you balance that out where you're going, you know, I sat there for 2 weeks waiting for her to get back to me. And I just started, and I wrote to her and I texted her, how are you doing? And never once did she say, hey, dad has COVID. I was in contact with him. I don't want your parents to get sick. So, you know, and she said that all in the end after my anger blob. So I love what you're saying, but where does it work with that? Because I tried that and it worked beautifully at the beginning, but then when I'm trying to communicate her and trying to get her saying, hey, you were said you were going to be here Christmas Eve. You didn't show up. I was okay with that between Christmas and New Year's. And I know I'm going a little bit big on this, but this even comes to bulimia, like when you're talking to your kids and going, yeah, I'm over it. And they lie to you. And yet they're still doing it and they're hiding it, because what are you hiding and how do you get? And I've been very careful in all those levels that you've been trying to say to being an ally to a child. But when they don't respond, Do you have an answer to that one, please? Yeah. And thank you, because that's really important for parents who have children with eating disorders, but also for parents like me. My daughter doesn't have one, but where you're doing all that you can and they're not responding to it.
Right. So I want to point out something I picked up on and something you said. So if I may say something. Okay. When you make a acknowledgement statement, some sort of empathetic statement, mm-hmm. I would encourage people to not say the word "but" afterwards.
Oh, sorry. I did not, because you know, I don't like that word. When I was saying it, but literally when I was typing it, I did not, because as you and I talked about, that's a no-no word. I put however.
Yeah, but to me, just now.
Yes, I did.
It's so common, and I want to make your listeners, so I'm not like, you know, you're a bad person, but I want your listeners to hear that. It's very hard not to, because you said that you, something about you liked what I said, but... I want to encourage people to just start to pay attention to that, to like, I like what you said, period.
Yes.
And then make something else. And it's very, very hard to do. And I have to catch myself as well. So one of the things I encourage parents to do is to talk to their kids about communication blocks. Like whenever I coach a parent, I have them say, okay, even with 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, I'd like you to talk to your child about the blocks and say, you know, say something like, and this is, you could share this with your daughter, right, to kind of open up, is, you know, I'm learning that there's things that I say when you're expressing something to me about what you're struggling with that might be shutting down communication. And I would like to share these with you and get your feedback on which ones you think I do.
Oh, I love that.
So, and I, oh my gosh, teenagers love to tell their parents, because what that's saying is the parent's saying, I'm not perfect. Mm-hmm. I'm learning communication. This is something I never learned about before. So then you get feedback. And let's say you show them the list of 10 and they say you do 5 of them. Mm-hmm. You're lucky you only do 5. And then you say, wow, okay, well, how, you know, 5's a bit too many for me to work on at once. Yeah. How about if I tell me which one really bothers you the most? I really hate it when you keep giving me advice. Let's say that's what they say. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of helps open up the sense of, we're going to talk about how we communicate with each other. So I would suggest just sharing this, starting off with your daughter about that. Yeah, because we can't control what they're doing, but I think even her getting that information about communication blocks and that you're expressing yourself will help build a more of a bond. And then you've got the other issue of your hurt feelings, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And
what happens with parents who have children with eating disorders? So I'm trying to build this into it, because I want them to understand what you bring to the table is that, I remember my parents speaking to me and I shut off, because it was like, you know, I don't understand, and you're right. But then is there not the other side of the table? So I'm bringing 5 to my daughter, who is an adult at 28 years old now, right? I can see that in teens, right? There's a little bit different than the 20s and 30s. And I mean, I'm communicating with my mother now and I'm in my 50s. Like, can we do that sooner? But I'm bringing to the table what I need from my side, but she's also bringing to the table what she needs. And so it's a dual. Have you worked with the dual side of it, where children, doesn't matter whether you're like 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, to an adult parent. Have you worked with those collectively to come? Because I know that you're talking about the blocks of the parent to a child.
Right. And that's my focus, is just what the parent
to
the how the parent can change. Right, right.
And is there anything that a parent can ask of a child to bring back to them, though? I mean, other than, I mean, you're asking the questions, I understand, and they come back to you. But sometimes they may still hold back. So you can say, hey, this is what I'd like to do. This is what I'd like to do. This is what happened with my daughter and I. We talked about it. We tried to work it, and she's given me some of hers. But I don't get all of hers. So if I don't have all of her blocks, does that make any sense? To communicate with me, how can I fully communicate with her? And I know that that's not where you're coming from, but do you have any advice?
So, I mean, I think if you both, you talk to her about it, mm-hmm. what, and you ask her for her feedback, yeah. and you can say, can I give you my feedback?
Okay.
Ask her.
Just ask
her. Just ask her. So I shared this with you, and, you know, you're a young woman now, and I'd like, Would you be willing to listen to what I feel, what some things that you might say that I feel are a block to me?
Beautiful. And I really needed to ask that because I think that there's a lot of parents asking that as well, and saying, yes, we can reach out to our children, but if they're not coming back to us, I think that's a beautiful recommendation to do that.
Yeah. And I think just starting with that, you listening first is going to be key to open up the door and say, I'm working on this. And you say, okay, if you say, let's say it's interrogating, you're asking too many questions, mom, you're asking all these questions that makes me want to shut down. So when you start to do that, you tell your child, okay, when I start to do that, this is what I'd like you to say to me to let me know I'm doing it.
Oh, beautiful.
Like, too many questions, mom, whatever. So you tell, this is how you give me feedback so I can work on it.
Beautiful.
So I think, you know, and just think about when you want to do empathetic statements, be very tenuous. It sounds like you're pretty upset about that. You look kind of, you look like you're having a hard time. Make it very tentative. Do not say, I know. It's not about you knowing. That's not at all what I'm talking about is empathetic phrase. Why, that's hard. Like my daughter used to call me up from college and she hated writing English papers because she was a math and business major. And she'd go on and on complaining. And I was just like, oh, wow. Yeah, you just don't like writing these papers. She'd go on and on. And I didn't have to say much, but I was giving her space to vent. That's the greatest gift you can give your kids, is space to just vent without you trying to fix it, telling them what to do, without you judging them. They don't need to be judged. And that's one of the things my daughter wrote me many, many cards during high school and in college. So she would write to me, thank you so much, mom, for being there with me during the mountains and valleys. And that's fundamentally what we want to create, is an environment where they feel like when things are really tough, that you will be there, that you're not going to just tell them, well, like when my daughter was with some guys I didn't like, but I didn't say, why did you pick him? You shouldn't be with him. You should have known better. If I had done that, she wouldn't have called me. So how can you be there? So when things are really hard, and you can be there during the ups and downs, that's what learning about how not to block and how to respond empathetically without trying to fix it. That's hard. What a challenge. Oh my gosh. Huh.
No judgment.
No judgment at
so
all.
If I were to talk to you, Cynthia, and I was your daughter and say, hey, mom, I'm struggling with an eating disorder. How can I be there for you? How can I help you? What's going on? Like, rather than, oh, what's wrong with you? Why are you doing that?
Yeah. So that goes into judgmental tone right away. Right. I love that. So it's like, wow, that's hard. I'd love to hear what's going on.
Yes. Yes.
Not like, why are you doing that? why did you, my daughter did partying and she did stuff that was not very healthy for herself because how she felt about herself. And if I judged her and criticized her, then she would never be able to get through it. Now she's doing beautiful, but she had many, many years. And she talks about this, so I'm okay saying this, you know, many years grappling with those feelings that she got about herself, starting when she was in fifth grade. So know that you're not there to fix your kids. You're not there to make them better. You, if you can learn about your own self and what triggers you, that's important. That's why if you understand your own communication blocks, what triggers you, and then work on yourself and then just say, when I'm hearing stuff, I'm not going to judge it. It's a change of your mind. Like, okay, I'm not going to be afraid. I'm not going to judge her. I'm not going to evaluate. All she needs from me right now is to be there for her or for him.
Yeah. And that's beautifully said, because as we are parents, as they get older, we become kind of a friend parent, but we're supposed to be parents first. I will be guilty of the fact that I wanted, once they got older, to be friends, and I realized that doesn't work 100%. You still have to have that parenting in you. And that's where I love Allied Parenting, because you'll always be their parent. You cannot become their best friend. My parents right now I live with, and they're in their 80s, and even with that, I respect my mother as being a mother and my father as being a father, even if that's how I respect them. And we can talk, we can talk about anything, but they're still my parents. Yeah. First and foremost, they're my parents.
That's right.
And sometimes we forget in this new generation that we try to be friends with our kids. No, your parents first. And I lost that thought. I will admit to it, guilty of it. But we need to look after, and we have to look after them, right? And we have to look at that. The way that you're saying is learn how to listen and stop saying, hey, I used to, walk, 7 miles in the snow when I was
pregnant. That's moral. That's an example of moralizing, right? Or you need to eat all your food. And it doesn't mean at times you have rules, you have guidelines, you set your own personal boundaries. I'm talking about when they're struggling in their life, can you be there for them and not judge them and not say you shouldn't feel that way? You shouldn't be like that. Really, I love it. You're agreeing with me to get rid of that word should. It's a nasty word and it's judgmental. And I see it more as how you're perceiving things is simply your perception. It's not the truth. It's just your perception, and we need to be flexible, to be open to looking at things in other ways, and then you can get unstuck. And I talk a lot about that in my book. How do you get unstuck from thinking in ways that are inflexible and judgmental? And your kids are there to actually help you grow.
Yes.
Right? You're there to support them, and they're there to help you grow. And if you look at it that way, then you can really appreciate the challenges you're feeling inside. You can, instead of blaming your child for making you feel this way, instead say, wow, what can I do differently? How can I change so that I might be able to have a better relationship with my child? Even I have one client, they have a 5-year-old and a 1-year-old, and they're already starting to realize working with me that they're calling their 1-year-old difficult. And I'm saying, you start that labeling now and they will continue to be difficult. So we're working on being empathetic with a 1-year-old even.
Wow. Yeah, the labeling is really big. But I also think that you have to stop feeling guilty about what you think that you failed at as a parent, because you're never going to grow with that. Because I think young parents constantly say, I even said that for years. Oh, I was too young when I had my first one. I didn't do right. I've never been the proper mother. And if I have that on me, that will reflect on my children looking at me and saying, yeah, you know what? You weren't. Because I didn't say, hey, I was great. I took you here. I took you there. I loved being with you. Yeah, I wasn't perfect, but no, the but. And
there you go.
I took a lot of time with you and I did a lot of things with you. So yeah, it wasn't perfect, but wow, no buts. And wow, stuff like those come in a lot, doesn't it?
Don't they? They just
right
in there. Guilt isn't helpful. And so you just kind of say, I'm working on this. You start working on your communication blocks. I think that's the greatest place to start on is how I'm trying to learn how to listen in a way that will make you want to talk to me.
Yes. And yes. And that is the most important for people who are listening. I know that, the people who are listening are the ones that I'm talking to are bulimics, but also remember too, that as parents, you send this to your parents if you're young and younger and they're dealing with parents, but also as parents who are bulimic and maybe you're dealing with children who might end up there. And I know, Cynthia, it's an overall thing, but be with this, just remember that these are really big lessons to learn. And I've learned a lot from you, Cynthia, and I'm definitely getting your book. By the way, Roy is really excited that he got your book.
Oh, yes. Good.
Reading it. I do have to give accolades for my listeners. We do have Lift Your Story podcast. Again, I want you to listen to Cynthia on that one too, because her message is huge. And thank you very much. Because as I said to you, when I wrote to my daughter, I know that you're having difficult times and I'm repeating myself, but I really need people to know that parents who are dealing with bulimics, and I'm going to be putting that up there and sending out to the parents who called me and asked me, how do I deal with my child who has an eating disorder? Mm-hmm. Talking not just about bulimics, but people with children have issues in the whole scope of it. And you're talking also about, your partner, child, a coworker, whatever. These are all really great, statements to listen to. Allied parenting. So Cynthia, please tell us, and I know that we've gone a little bit over, but this is just such an exciting topic for me. And it means a lot to me because my parents didn't understand and I want parents to learn. Now, in my parents' sake, I want to say this really quickly. It was 30 years ago. And as you know, back then, parents, what they didn't know, they were afraid of. And there was no information about eating disorders back then. So mom even couldn't find it. Now today she's going, oh, I understand it more. 30 years later, that's okay. Or 40, whatever. But you're giving the opportunity to parents now to take care of that. So please let them know where they can find you and where they can get your book and all of that, please.
Great. And there's, specialists that are therapists that specialize in that. And I think if you want to just learn how to do the communication and do the listening, and also I have discipline in there as well. It's easy enough to go to Ally Parenting, A-L-L-Y, Ally, parenting.com. That'll take you to my website. And you can learn about my private coaching and all sorts of things that I'm doing. So allyparenting.com and you will find me.
Absolutely wonderful. I really appreciate you being here. This is a very important topic for parents and for parents of children who, like, whether it doesn't matter what age. So thanks again for being here. Appreciate it. And please, everybody, go visit Cynthia. I really think that that's a really important thing to do.
Great. Thank you. It's great to be here, Lorian. Okay. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Be sure to visit me at bleepbulimia.com.